It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 492 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week we have another great crowdfunding doubleheader weekend, and they're both great interviews, so be sure to listen to them both. Everything kicks off with my fun interview with Danny Hedlund, the CEO of Brink Literacy Project. She has a Kickstarter going on for the Literary Tarot, which is described as a tarot deck unlocking the secrets of classic literature. There are several great comics creators involved in this project, which we discuss, and we talk about how the cards came to be, as well as how you can get them. Her Kickstarter's doing very well, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't jump on board as soon as you get done listening to our conversation and this episode. Then everything wraps up with the return of Caleb Palmquist. His latest Kickstarter is for Modern Mythology, Folklore Retold, which is described as a series of myths from around the world retold for the modern day. His Kickstarter is also doing well, and this book appeals to people who enjoy mythology, exciting retellings of classic tales, incredible artwork, and even silly characters. There are several covers involved, as well as a number of stories, 20 of them in fact, that fill this 180-page volume. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's an awful lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Danny Hedlund, the CEO of, it's the Brink Literacy Project, right, Danny?
Yep, that's me.
That's you. You're the CEO and stuff. And you have a Kickstarter going on right now for the Literary Tarot. Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe so. I think tarot just makes it sound much fancier than it actually is.
And it kind of reveals my ignorance about the subject matter. I don't know much about tarot cards and stuff like that. So I'm going to depend on you to do all the good explaining and getting everything right on there.
So I'm happy to do it.
All right. Well, first off, why don't you talk about what the Brink Literacy Project is?
Yeah, of course. The Brink Literacy Project is a kind of mad idea. We are a charity based around the idea that stories have the power to change the world. And we do that in two main ways. One is the most obvious way. We increase literacy rates. So we go into max security prisons and homeless shelters, low-income high schools, and we use storytelling to elevate education rates, but more than anything, to kind of change the way that people think about themselves. And then the other big side of what we do is we make sure great stories are still being told to inspire. So we run comic incubators. We run really great writing programs where we champion debut writing. We have a particular love of the weird. So we're always into sci-fi and slipstream, the weirdest comics you can get your hands on. And we kind of merge those two things together to elevate stories from around the globe.
That's great. How long have you been doing this?
I started this nonprofit when I was 19, so I've been doing it my whole life.
All right. Wow. We won't ask how many years. No, that's private stuff.
So. Yeah, that would be rude. It's 14.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like a great project. I honestly have not heard of it before, so I'm really happy to hear about this.
It's because we all have English degrees and we don't know how the internet works. Every time I have a board meeting, they're like, Danny, what's going on with marketing? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm afraid of Facebook.
Or Zoom or things like that. It's all kind of wonderful, strange stuff because I do more Zoom meetings thanks to the pandemic than I ever have before. And it's funny to watch people struggle to get in there. And some people don't realize they have to turn on their screen. And some people don't realize they have to turn on their microphone and all that good stuff goes on.
So anyway. I am enjoying a bunch of my male colleagues applying makeup before Zoom calls. Like it's a level of vanity I've never seen before. And I'm very entertained by it.
I'll never ask which ones those are.
Obviously, I will preserve their integrity.
Be good. Okay, so let's get to the Kickstarter, because there's lots of good stuff we need to talk about in there. It's called the Literary Tarot, or Tarot. I keep messing that up. It's Tarot, isn't it? Literary Tarot. And the goal was $80,000. Let me get the vital stuff out of the way, because people always get mad at me because I never say this soon enough. It's going to it'll only be funded if it reaches its goal by Wednesday, June 30, 2021, which is only a couple days away, at 11:59 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Now, the goal was $80,000, but as we're recording this, which is a little early, you have already passed $580,000. Congratulations. Wow.
Oh, thanks so much. It still feels incredibly surreal.
It's just great. Now, the important thing is, even though they've got that good amount of money, that's not the end of it. We still have until that good time to be able to get more. And as I was telling you before we started recording, the more you get, the fewer Kickstarters you have to do, which is a wonderful thing. So if you want to support this project, don't wait until then. Do wait until after we get done talking and after the podcast is done. But don't wait until Wednesday at 11:58 to try to jump on board. And, you know, obviously with that amount of money, you have hit almost all your stretch goals. There's only one left, that 600,000, I think, that is on the list. So there are wonderful things on this. I mean, gosh, just great stuff. Well, before we get to all that, why don't you let me read the description. This says, a tarot deck unlocking the secrets of classic literature, I think you described it. It's on there. So talk about what this is all about and what's involved with it.
Yeah, of course. So sort of the basic premise behind the Literary Tarot is we went out and we found the most amazing living storytellers to come in and find a classic piece of literature that they grew up with, that impacted the way that they write, that perhaps scared them to the point where they couldn't sleep at night. And they take the themes they love about those books and they pair them with a tarot card that has those same sort of themes. So Patrick Rothfuss, who wrote The Name of the Wind, came in and paired Don Quixote with the Fool. So the Fool is a traditional tarot card that's all about kind of idealism to a level of delusion. And so that was a great character for Don Quixote out there chasing his windmills. So that's sort of the model. And we just brought in some of the most amazing comic writers, novelists, screenplay writers, comedians who came in and brought their passions directly into the deck. And then my art team went out and just illustrated this beautiful collection of 78 cards.
Now, as I went through the list, how many authors are there altogether in this?
There are 78, so you can imagine what my inbox is like.
Well, that's one thing that folks know who are authors know how to do these days is our email. They know how to handle that. I went through the list, and of course, this being a comics-oriented podcast, I wanted to pick out the names that I recognized particularly as comics professionals. And let me read real quickly the list. Brian Michael Bendis, of course, known for Superman and other things. Kelly Sue DeConnick, I always get her name wrong. Kieran Gillen, who's now doing The Eternals. Jonathan Hickman, X-Men stuff. Marjorie Liu, Mark Miller or Mark Millar, depending on how you want to pronounce it. Benjamin Percy, Greg Rucka, and Mark Waid. Those are all really nicely known names. So you've got some big star power in comics as well as other authors involved in this. How did you do that? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? How did you get this cast together?
Honestly, our roster is kind of a mixed bag of how it all came together. When we first sort of concocted this idea, we didn't actually know that much about tarot. I had just published my very first story in Friction, which is the big periodical that the nonprofit puts out, from a debut writer about this incredible tarot reader sort of murder mystery that's told entirely through Yelp reviews. It's just brilliant. And I started to be like, what's this tarot thing? I don't know a lot about it. And I really started digging into it. And as an avid comics fan and an avid comics publisher, I really started to see the things I love about visual storytelling in tarot. I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's interesting little stories with gorgeous artwork, and you kind of think critically about the pairings. So I was like, okay, if we're going to do something like this, we should bring in really great creatives, but who knows better how to pair the visual with the storytelling than comics? So we have a couple comic creators that we've worked with that we're really close with. So Benjamin Percy and Kelly Sue DeConnick were my first calls, and they immediately came onto the project. But what I hadn't anticipated was how excited about the project they were. And they were like, hey, would you mind if I called a couple of my friends? I was like, sure, guys. Like, thinking it would be, you know, maybe people they got drunk with at uni. But instead, it was all of the people I love most on my comic shelf. So, yeah, the excitement was really kind of contagious. And all of the authors donated their time because this is a fundraiser. We're using all of the proceeds to use work our educational programs. So, yeah, it was really amazing. My inbox suddenly became like Christmas morning.
Very good. Very good. Because that's, like I said, I mentioned all the names that I recognize. I'm sure there's others in there that I might have missed. But those are the ones that I know. And I'm astonished. Now, before we get too far, I had a question that I asked you before. And I think probably other people have a question, too. These are authors. And they do the pairing, but and yet there's artwork associated with it. And I don't know that some of these authors are all that good at art. So I was kind of worried that I thought, how did they do that? And you explained how the process went a little to me. So how did that go?
Yeah, of course. Although I really enjoy when Lev Grossman, the author of The Magician, sends me incoherent scribbles, I knew very immediately that if we were going to get Margaret Atwood and Lev Grossman and Patrick Rothfuss together, they couldn't do their own art. Like, they're incredible storytellers, but I should not give them markers. So the very first thing I did is I put my art team together. And since we've been publishing comics for 6 years now, I had a really beautiful roster of great editorial and comic artists. So we have 5 artists on the team, really diverse, really wonderful team. And they each man one of the suits. For anyone who doesn't know about tarot, there's 5 suits. There's the major arcana, which are the big, recognizable, kind of like, oh God, my life's about to change cards. And then there's 4 minor arcana suits that reflect different parts of the human experience. So each artist came in with a similar color palette so I could keep things cohesive, but they really brought their own inner themes together on the suit that they man over.
So it's really interesting. Now, one of the things I'm really fascinated by is the fact that this comes like in a box. That is really interesting. Are they grouped when you get them? They're all grouped in separate, there's ones called the literary, the literary tarot is the name of the, but there's all different cards. Are the cards gathered by those groupings?
Yeah. So if you haven't done tarot before, kind of just imagine it as a basic card deck. So you're going to shuffle it together. And then you're going to kind of lay it out in a particular pattern, and where the cards are laid down represents your past, present, future, that sort of thing. So the idea of how we're storing them is if we were going to make these little magical portals into literary insights, we didn't want to just shove them in a card box. Like, we wanted to do something really cool and beautiful. And luckily, I have a really incredible printer that just lets me do whatever the hell I want. So we were like, we should give it a fake book box. Like, it should be able to sit on your bookcase and pull it out. And then you open it up kind of like, you know, a carved out book from our favorite murder mysteries. So it'll fit right inside this little fake book box. And then there's a wee little guide that goes with it. That's both for a really experienced tarot reader to kind of see how we made the cards our own. But for a newbie tarot reader that's like, what the hell do any of these mean? It'll just tell you what the hell they mean, but written by our authors and with incredible charm.
Now, the stretch goals you've already gotten, I'll read some of them because they really are going to make some things really beautiful. Gilded deck edges, higher card stock, gold foil book boxes, a free postcard set, gold foil mini guidebook, the big guidebook add-on, the new big book cover, gold foiled big book. That's going to be kind of neat to have. I always loved gold foil.
We clearly really love foil. It's a big thing for the art team.
Now, the one that you hadn't got when we are talking is the tarot cloth add-on. Let's see, 20 by 20 inch flannelette cloth that'll be silkscreen printed with the custom design by artist Sam Dow. Wrap your deck up in style. Use it to create the perfect surface for your readings. So that's at $600. So hopefully by the time this posts, you're there already. And we'll see what happens after that. So this is just are you surprised by the success? I'm sure you're happy with it. But that's, you know, when you ask for 80,000 and you're almost, you're heading for multiple times that, which is great. I mean, you know, that's, there are a lot of Kickstarter people who would love to have that level of success. Did it surprise you? Were you, you know, pretty happy with it? What's your reaction to it?
Yeah, this isn't our first Kickstarter, but I would definitely say it's our most successful. Before this, about once a year, we'd run a campaign for Friction, which is a very popular art and literature collection. It's the fastest growing literary journal in the world, mm-hmm. but it's a literary journal. So like, who the hell reads those? So if we get like, you know, a couple thousand subscriptions, like we feel really good about ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had those same sort of publishing expectations when we went into the deck. And when we were creating it, it's such a weird project. I mean, I had so many conversations with the celebrities we onboarded that were like, Danny, I love everything Brink does, but like, what the hell do you want me to do? This makes no sense. And I was like, okay, let me sit you down. Let me walk you through it. So there was a good couple months when we were building it where I was like, maybe we're crazy. Like, maybe no one will want this. This is just a totally insane thing we're making. Mm-hmm. So I've got to say, I was a little bit afraid. And then the first day of launch, we hit our goal just under 5 hours.
Wow.
And I just remember staring at the computer screen and messaging my COO, who actually lives in England. She takes up the UK branch. Mm-hmm. And we were just slacking each other like, oh my God, do people actually like this? And then the response in the community was incredible. So some celebrities that we really wanted to get, I'm really amused by this. In fact, Madeline Miller, who's one of my favorite authors, she wrote Circle. She's just incredible. And I tried so damn hard to get her for the deck. I must have stalked her publicist for like 4 months. And she just backed the project on the second day and then sent me a message that was like, hey, you probably don't have a spot left, but I would just love to be a part of this. Like, I'll take a card if someone drops out. Like, how can I be involved? I was like, oh, well, you can be involved right now because I've secretly been holding a card for you. So it really kind of caught on, and it was really amazing to see the response from the community, and not just the amazing authors that donated their time because they care about the cause, but it was just, I mean, nearly 10,000 people really loving something we're putting out is really just humbling. And I'm honestly still kind of shocked about it.
Yeah, because as we're talking, the number of backers you have is over 8,800.
Yeah.
That's a lot of backers, I have to say. And even that for Kickstarter, that's quite a lot. So that's great. I mean, you're building obviously on previous success, and that's always a good way to do a Kickstarter. So just spectacularly done stuff. I was curious, you mentioned that the authors turned in stuff about why they chose that. Are we ever going to get to see why they did that pairing, did the stuff they wrote, or is that something that we're not likely to see?
So actually, you get to see it in two ways. So the miniature guidebook, there's a page in it that is directly the card meaning told through the classic lens. So for example, Margaret Atwood paired Jane Eyre with the Queen of Light. And so when you open up that page, you will see Margaret Atwood mimicking the voice of Jane Eyre to tell you exactly why that card represents that. It's a card of like fierce protectiveness, but also so much passion that sometimes that can hurt the people around her. So she zooms in on the scene where Jane puts out the fire on top of her soon-to-be lover's bed. And it's a really cool sort of look. Or Lev Grossman, I just edited his this morning. He paired King Arthur with the World card, which was one of my favorite pairings in the deck because it's so unconventional. Instead of pairing King Arthur with a really masculine card like the Emperor, he really wanted to focus on the beauty of Camelot being that they strove for this ideal, but that it was inevitably going to die. So his write-up is just amazing. It's just like, lo, young soldier, you come to this land thinking someday you could be a king if you pull this sword out of potential. And it's so adorable, and I just love it. So everyone who pledges for the deck will get this mini guidebook. But then there's also the big book add-on, which everyone gets the PDF for free because we're all for you knowing everything. But it'll pull back the curtain and actually talk about like me sitting down with Lev and Lev saying, hey, Danny, this is what's important to me. And me being like, okay, Lev, here's three card options. And Lev's like, okay, I like this one for this reason. So no matter how you pledge, whether or not you get the super fancy book that we're going to gild up the wazoo, you're always going to get to know exactly what the conversations were when we sat down with these amazing authors that brought them to these pairings.
Were there any cards that a lot of people wanted?
Yeah, the Death card is one of the most popular cards in the deck. Rebecca Roanhorse, another incredible comic and prose writer, snatched it up as like the third pairing. But that everyone asks me whether or not they want that card. The Fool is a really big popular tarot card. And then there's things like the High Priestess and the Emperor, the Empress, like big powerhouses. But we also had a lot of fighting about the actual like texts. So like Cassandra Clare and Terry Brooks had just this adorable fight over like Peter Pan and who could have the Page of Cups. And I'm just brokering these weird conversations between my literary heroes, kind of like a child whose parents are divorcing and being like, no, I love you both. I want to live with both of you. So it was fun. And everyone wanted Frankenstein. Like every single ask was like, can I have Mary Shelley? And I was like, Isaac Marion stole it like in the first 5 minutes. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's funny. That must have been a real interesting process, though, to deal with authors and kind of and their selections. So you actually sat down with them and presented options to them.
Yeah, there were a couple people who came in who knew a lot about tarot and paired backwards. But most cases, I'd sit down with someone. And I mean, some of them are so interesting, like Joe Abercrombie, who's one of my favorite writers. No one can do fight scenes like that, man. I really expected him to choose like a fantasy or a sci-fi book. That's what he's known for. Instead, he was like, you know, Danny, I've really loved The Christmas Carol since I was 5 years old. And I think of these great times in which I read it with my parents. And like, I really want to do this one. And I was like, oh, what a weird glimpse into what 5-year-old Joe would be like. So usually it was classic first, but some people, Margaret Atwood, Willow Wilson, Kelly Sue DeConnick, came in as big tarot readers already. And they were like, hey, this is a card I really love. I want to pair it backwards. So then we just had the conversations in reverse where I was like, okay, you know, this card means you think a lot with your head, but you also have a tendency to be cruel. So that was the pairing for Kelly Sue DeConnick. So we thought really hard about a lot of options for that. And she decided on Marcus Aurelius's Meditation. So anyone who has a philosophy degree that didn't help you get employed, you will be happy by this one time philosophy made it into pop culture.
That's funny. Now, you mentioned digital, and there's also, for $10, you can actually get a digital copy of all 78 cards, which I find interesting. So that's kind of good. It's going to make it accessible to everybody. The thing I think people should know is that to buy the cards, the box set, it's $50 or more. That's the thing. And then to get the reader edition, you get $70 or more for that. So, and then let's see, the $150 is the retailer's edition. Do you allow stores and stuff to sell these?
Yeah, that's actually been one of our most popular tiers. Usually it's little local bookstores or like fun little local occult stores that want to pick it up. And then there's always someone being like, listen, I just need to get this for me and all my friends. And I'm like, I really want to give you retailer, but I can't. You've just got to buy it normally because I'm so sorry. It's a fundraiser.
Because as we're talking, 99 people have chosen that already. Wow, that's a good number for that. Now, as of course with every Kickstarter, some of the levels are already gone. You had an early bird set for $45. Those aren't available. You got 2,078 backers for that.
Yeah, that's a good glimpse of what the first 24 hours of the campaign was. We averaged a pledge every like minute 20. It was very intense.
Great. Well, that's a good kind of intense. That's because I always talk about the Kickstarter heart attack where you refresh the screen and nobody pledges and you go, oh no, it's over. No one else is ever going to pledge ever again.
It does feel like that. I know it shouldn't be, but honestly, even like on day two where it took like 3 minutes for someone to pledge, I was like, oh God, we've lost it. Everyone hates us. I'm never going to be able to fund a prison course again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that didn't happen to you, thankfully. That's a good stuff. Because the early bird literary tarot went out, and that was 792 backers. Some Kickstarters would like to have that number, honestly.
Honestly, so when I run the book campaign in the fall, I'm going to love to have a tenth of these numbers. Like, I'm really worried this may have ruined me for Kickstarters, and it's going to be so hard to go back to moving books.
Well, you know what? I think you're going to build on that. What I think is going to happen. Of course, your expectations are going to be higher, probably. But hey, that's a good thing. That's a good thing to have. So that's a great thing. So I'm just curious. Of course, that leads to this being a success already, and when it ends on Wednesday, I'm going to be watching to see how, you know, just how far this goes. Have you thought about what you're going to do after this? You've already mentioned that you're going to be selling a book later on. What about, might you do a second edition of the Literary Tarot?
Yeah, that's, I wasn't thinking about it until I discovered that a couple of our really big celebrities who had actually met doing this campaign together kind of formed like a secret Zoom group behind my back to talk about what cards they were going to snag for next year, which is the first time it occurred to me we could just do this again. So I've been sort of thinking about how we could do something that kind of blends these two worlds, but is still unique, so it feels really fun. So we've been batting around a couple ideas for that. But to be honest, what we would have done if we hadn't done a tarot campaign and COVID hadn't been going on is we would have thrown like fancy people galas, and we would have tricked rich people into putting on corsets and then getting drunk and then tricking them into caring about marginalized communities and then taking their money and then funding it. And let me tell you, a group of introverted lit geeks are not good at throwing galas. So I really hope that we can find a way to put out something amazing like this. Like, this is what we do best. We're creators. If we can create something really great once a year that's pretty weird, but really gets people excited as a way to fund the really great work that we do, man, I'll be the happiest boss. So I'm definitely looking for ways to bring something this weird. I hope someday to do like a D&D themed thing, because those would merge all of my favorite things.
That would be fun. That would be fun to see. I'd love to see that, because that would be great to do. Like, oh, wow, a literary D&D. That would be fun to see. There, you got all kinds of great ideas for that. All kinds of good stuff.
I think about like George R. R. Martin and Lev Grossman that have this really adorable bromance about how much they love trains, and having them like come together to create like a D&D space where it merges Game of Thrones with the magicians. They can write their own character cards. Someday, I feel like I'm going to find a way to unite all of these incredible storytellers for live role playing.
Wow, that'd be something to see. Of course, you could do a video of that.
I mean, I'm sure those men are very charismatic. They definitely want to be on a video together.
That'll be fun. There's so many good things that you guys could do, and just increase literacy and, you know, and people who understand. Because I'm always stunned how people know about The Simpsons, but they don't know anything about Shakespeare. That always shocks me when I see
that stuff. We just need a Simpsons episode about Shakespeare. That's clearly the gateway drug.
Yeah, so you have good ideas. That's the good thing. All those good things are lots and lots of fun. Of course, you could always do these cards with pictures of the creators on there if they wanted to get their picture taken portraying the character. That could be fun.
Oh, man, I actually, a couple issues of Friction ago, by a couple I mean years, because I apparently am old, we had Christopher Moore, who's one of my favorite prose writers, come in to do a feature, and he requested to be drawn as one of his main characters. So there's this amazing portrait of Christopher Moore dressed up as a drunk fool from like a 14th century knight. It's so great. And now I'm imagining all our authors, and I'm so happy. Like, you see Margaret Atwood dressed up in 19th century, like ladies' maid outfit. This is going to be great.
That would be fun. I'd like to see that. That would be great. Well, it's, you know, I don't want to talk past this, because this is a very important thing, and there's plenty of mileage still to go on this one. So don't think that this is over by any means. But are there other projects that you guys are working on that we should be aware of?
The thing that we're going to be launching in the fall, I'm really excited about. I know I've spoken about Kelly Sue DeConnick like six times now, but I just think Kelly's the loveliest thing ever. We created a really cool partnership with her and Visible Women, which is a movement she runs to try to get women and marginalized genders into comics. So instead of just kind of hiring any new comic creators that we see fit, we're also going to have these really incredible writers, many of the ones you've now read out loud from the comic world, write some short sequential stories so we can bring brand new creatives in to illustrate them and elevate their careers. So I'm really, really stoked about that. As anyone who works in comics knows, it's one of the most inaccessible creative industries to break into. So I'm really thrilled to create a ladder for people to get some exposure. And so we're going to be doing that. And then if you care about the nonprofit side, I'm just killing myself to get into a max security prison. I'm so excited to see my students. And the moment that COVID stops being the fist that keeps on punching, I cannot wait to go back into prison.
Okay. I don't understand that reference, but okay.
We teach in prison. And COVID has prevented us from doing so. It's one of our largest programs. I really love it. I bring like the Killing Joke into a max security prison. We talk about if we're all just one day away from, you know, ending up in max security prison and or being a green face villain. Mm.
Wow. Okay. That I didn't know that. That's wild. Is it just you guys or do you bring in some of the creative people or how do you do that?
Oh man, I love bringing people into prison, but my educators are the primary workforce. And then we bring in like, you know, funders and governors and creatives to watch them cry. That's how I know Kelly Sue DeConnick, actually. When she wrote Bitch Planet, we were talking about bringing her in so she could, you know, create some more awesome nonconformity. We've been running that program for, 6 years now. It's really fun.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing stuff you guys do.
Yeah. If you want to come into prison, I'll take you. You'll love it.
I don't know if I want to go in there. They might not let me out. That's the bad thing. That'd be the bad thing about that. Now, do you guys have a website?
Oh, yeah, of course. If you want to learn about the crazy nonprofit nonsense like prisons, it's brinklit.org. If you want to learn about really cool comic stuff, and if you're a growing creator and you say, you know, would love to get an agent, that is frictionlit.org. And then if you want to learn more about the literary tarot on the interwebs, at literary tarot is our handle on Twitter, and it's full of beautiful artwork and snarky misspellings, usually from me.
That's, you know, I have to say that was my mom. My mom loved nothing better than to mispronounce words. And I would go to school mispronouncing the words that she would, you know, she would always say things in the wrong way just because she found it fun to do that. And I think creative people are that way. They love nothing better than getting these words wrong just so that just so it stands out when you mention it to people. So I can relate to that. Very well. So and any other projects that we should know about, or is that pretty much cover it?
That's pretty much going to be the next year of my life.
Wow. Okay. Well, that sounds like a very busy and good year. I guess in Kickstarter, let's see, how do you, you're identified under, I'm trying to see what the name of the.
The Literary Tarot is the easiest way to search it on Kickstarter. You can also search by the Brink Literacy Project, but not even my mother remembers the name of my company. So you're probably better off with the Literary Tarot.
Okay, because as we talk, of course, I've got your Kickstarter in the background, and every few minutes the number keeps going up, which is a good sign. I mean, even we're not even doing this live, which was going to post on Sunday morning. But even in the quiet times, it's going up. And I think that's a really great sign for the Literary Tarot. And I think for you and your company, because it's great stuff. Just I can't wait to see what you guys are going to do. We'll have to do this again sometime when you got other projects going. And you have to tell us how prison went after being
there. Oh, I would love to. Again, just come into prison. I feel like you cannot do a podcast from prison, but I'd love to bring you in. Honestly, it will make you feel incredible, which is not a normal response to prison. But it's honestly one of the most heart-wrenchingly beautiful, optimistic moments anyone can have.
Wow. We might have to do that. I'm in Florida, though. That's the bad news. I might have to travel up that way.
Florida prisons. I don't know about that. It's too hard. No, I kid. We can definitely take you into a Florida prison.
Well, Danny, you're doing such wonderful stuff. It's so encouraging to hear all this wonderful stuff going on. Just keep doing these terrific things. And, man, we'll have to talk again sometime soon.
Oh, I would love that. And thank you so much for having me on and for letting me ramble about something as silly and lovely as literary tarot.
Sounds great.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always a pleasure to talk with Caleb Palmquist, who describes himself on Kickstarter as some guy who likes comics and sometimes makes them, which I find very funny. And then he's got several books that he's done, and he's got A Small Favor, Unicorn Vampire Hunter, which I really like too, and Modern Mythology, which has bearing on the Kickstarter that you've got going. How's it going, Caleb?
It's going good. It's going great. Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. But when this posts, your Kickstarter will be underway and hopefully doing well at that point. So we're a little ahead of time, so we can't really talk numbers at this point, but things will happen. If you go to Kickstarter and look under it, how's it undescribed on Kickstarter?
So it's called Modern Mythology Folklore Retold. You can also find it if you go to modernmythologybook.com.
Okay, very good. So that's good. I like the first volume. The first volume was fun. I enjoyed all kinds of interesting stories. It was quite a nice collection, different styles, different people, different characters. Now, as I was looking over you sent me a link to the screen, so I got to look at what's up there. And one of the subjects is back again. It's Nana, I think, is back.
Oh, yep.
So that was a good, I've actually interviewed the guy who does that, and it's a great book, wonderful stuff. I think the first time I came across it was in that Modern Mythology book that you did. So that's how I became familiar with it.
Greg Anderson, LSA, is Nana the Were Spider, and, he had already, done several, two or three Is Nana the Were Spider books before he did his Is Nana story in the first Modern Mythology. And then he came back to me this time and wanted to do another story with the same artist, David Brame, who's really cool. And so, yeah, he's returning. And there's several other writers and artists who are returning for this one. But that's the... that's probably the most direct link between the two of them, between the two books, is that there's a Is Nana story in both of them. Yeah.
Oh, good. It's good, 'cause I enjoy the Is Nana books. I think they're great fun. I like that. It's great that you're doing it and involved in it. Now, you had a very successful first book and really enjoyed it, like I said. And I know a lot of people who backed you on Kickstarter. And now you've got the new one on Kickstarter. What's the difference between this book as a second volume? You talked about folklore and stuff. So the other one was much more gods and goddesses kind of set up.
Well, the other one was called – the first book was called Modern Mythology, The Hero's Journey. And when I did that book – it was specifically focused on heroes in mythology. Mm-hmm. And so not every culture around the world has hero myths, but we kind of focused on heroic characters. Mm-hmm. Whereas this book kind of, we kind of broke it open a little more. There are hero myths in this, but there's also stories about gods. There are, stories about monsters and all sorts of things. So this book has a wider theme, than the first book for sure, but it's similar to the last book in that it borrows myths from all around the world, not just sort of Greek and Roman and Norse mythology, but also, there's African myths and Asian myths and, there's an Australian myth, South American myths, Native American myths, in there. So there's a lot of, it's very multicultural in terms of the inspiration for these stories.
Mm-hmm. And you got people from around the world working on it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. There's, people from a number of different countries who have participated.
Now I got to ask you, of course, you put the first one together, and now you've done the second one easier this time.
That is a good question. Yes, I will say yes. It's still a lot of work, an enormous amount of work to put a book like this together. But I think the fact that I had already done one, so I knew what to expect, and the fact that I was sort of proven as someone who could do this. So the people who are coming to me, I think had more confidence and they were, there was more excitement from the participants. And so, I didn't have to do as much sort of tracking people down this time as I did last time.
I like the still people sought you out though. Apparently some of them did.
For sure. Yeah. No. Yeah. 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 So, on both of the books, you know, I reached out to people that I knew, but I definitely got people who I didn't know, reaching out to me, and people I did know reaching out to me wanting to do stories. And so, yeah, the fact that, of course, when I did the first one, nobody really knew, who I was or, knew what I could do or whether or not the book would be worth doing. And so I was kind of recruiting people. And then this time, you know, I definitely had more interest the other way in terms of people coming to me and wanting to be part of it.
We got these other great books, A Small Favor, which I really enjoyed. And also the one that you've done recently, that Unicorn Vampire Hunter, I think is really good. It's very different take on unicorns, which I thought was really It's interesting because unicorns are starting now. Used to be unicorns were just beautiful, lovely creatures, and everybody just adored them. It's not quite that way so much anymore. Which,
yeah.
So yours is one of the books that I always enjoy. Yeah, it's. I don't want to spoil the book and give anything on it, but it's really an interesting take, a very creative perspective.
Thank
on
you.
Unicorns. I really like that so much. Anyway, so, you know, people always get on me if I get this far in and I haven't said, when is the Kickstarter going to conclude?
So I believe it concludes on July 24th, exactly 1 month after it started.
Okay, very good. You remember what time?
Like 6 a.m. or something. Okay. I believe that I launched the Kickstarter in the morning. I used to, once upon a time when I was first starting out in Kickstarter, I would launch at exactly at midnight because I sort of thought there was like some romanticism to that. But I ultimately discovered that that doesn't actually really help very much. And I found that launching early in the morning, right at the beginning of the day, tends to be better because you get more engagement right when you launch if people are actually awake when you launch. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting because, you know, people are constantly learning Kickstarter. And of course, what works for you may not always work for everybody else either.
Right.
Because you're on the West Coast.
Yes.
That's a different thing. Of course, I'm on the East Coast. It's a little different. And so I know some people in London or in that area will launch something based on the time it is in America.
Uh-huh.
Because they want to make sure the Americans get to contribute and do stuff with that. So anyway, the good news is you look under Modern Mythology, you'll find it on Kickstarter, and that's one. So we got some time. That doesn't mean you should wait. The thing to do is get involved now. Get early and spread the word about Modern Mythology so that Caleb here doesn't have to do the refreshing of the screen and the heart attack when there's nobody new on there. In the last 10 minutes, nobody pledged. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Daily heart attack, I call it, because poor people are just – they're endlessly refreshing and refreshing and it doesn't –
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the thing to do is get it right now. Go well. Wait till after we get done talking, and then go and do that. And
finish listening to the podcast, and then go over to Kickstarter. There you go.
Although, of course, you're listening. You could probably do it while you're listening, as far as that goes. But we want to make sure that we get the backing going on that, and make sure that it's a good place because there are. I actually know of a Kickstarter that they were asking for $7,500, and believe it or not, they went over $100,000.
Wow.
I was shocked. I was like, whoa. I said, now see, the bad news is next time he's got to live up to that. He's got to do that number again or more, or he's going to be considered, oh, well, that didn't work out so well.
Right.
That's the problem about being the huge success like that. So,
for sure.
What is the goal, by the way?
So the goal for Modern Mythology is $5,500, which is pretty modest compared to, I think, some of the projects that I've done in the past. But that is the amount that we need to get it printed and out to the backers. And then, the more that we make, the more copies I can print and the more compensation I can provide to the to the contributors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but basically I wanted to set the goal low because we've done the work and I want to make sure that the book gets printed no matter what. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it goes way beyond that, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Cause if you do really, really well, then you could always do the next volume and you don't even have to do a Kickstarter for it.
That right. Would be, right.
That's nice to do. If you got to do the Kickstarter, you got to do it. As I always like to say, I regret the Kickstarter has only been around as long as it has been, because there are a lot of stories that people wanted to tell that we never got to read because there wasn't Kickstarter until it came.
Right.
So I'm always grateful for it. I think that's why I have. We were talking before I started record how many projects that I've backed, and I backed a bunch. Uh-huh. I've backed more than 450 of them, and so I really believe in doing this, and I love to see stories that I might not have seen if it hadn't been for Kickstarter. So I think that's a great thing. So how long has it taken you to put this one together compared to the first one?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I actually think that this one has taken longer. But part of that has to do with the fact that I intended for it to take longer. The first one, I think, was about a year and a half process.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some setbacks and some delays. And then this one, I intentionally, every deadline I made way in advance of what I really needed.
Mm-hmm.
On purpose. So been working on this basically since we finished the first one. I think all told it's been about 2 years from conception to now. And it's been about 2 years, but it's been not a super stressful 2 years, because like I said, every deadline I put way out in advance. Some of the stories that are in this book have been done for like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to just make sure that all the pieces would line up when it was time. So that, you know, when it was time to put out the book, we wouldn't be running around like crazy trying to get it done.
Yeah. I've done that kind of stuff. I help out some folks with putting comics together sometimes. And every once in a while, the phone call comes, hey, we got to have this now.
Yep. Yep.
And I jump on the computer and start putting pages together and stuff like that. And stuff. Because not only do you have to have the art, you have to lay it out in such a way that the printers can use it. And that's kind of where I come in.
Yeah.
I'd put that together. So anyway, you made four stories available to me, and I saw a fifth one on the Kickstarter page.
Yeah.
And stuff. And there's some stuff I wanted to talk with you about. Now, and granted, you're not the one that created the story, so I'm just sort of.
Yeah, no.
I'll ask some questions. You've got the first story that I read is called Beautiful Shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's an interesting one because it is a very, let's just say, a well-known character. Particularly now, it's done by Katrina Kunstmann. I'm sure I'm fracturing that.
Somehow. I think it's pronounced Kunstmann.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Katrina's story is about Loki, and of course, it's funny because Katrina has been drawing this version of Loki for years. Of course, right now Loki is incredibly popular. We got the TV show and everything. And, and this is a little bit of a different version of Loki, but it's still based on, the original myths. And this story that Katrina wrote and drew is, about Skadi. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm not totally sure. Is a giantess in the original Norse myth, is a giantess whose father was murdered by sort of the Norse gods, and then comes for revenge, and the gods say, well, you know, we're going to try to appease you by saying, you know, you can marry one of our men, one of the gods, but you can only choose by looking at their feet. And she chooses the most beautiful feet, thinking the feet belong to one god, and they actually turn out to belong to another god. And then so she gets married to that god anyway. And then she says, well, I still wanted revenge, but I won't get revenge if you can make me laugh. And Loki pulls off some hijinks in order to make Skadi laugh. But in the original myth, he actually ties a rope around his testicles and then ties the other end of the rope to the beard of a goat. And every time the goat jumps, Loki yelps in pain and eventually falls over onto Skadi, which makes her laugh because of Loki's pain. Now, Katrina's version of the story is a little more appropriate than that. But in the story, Loki and his nephew run a cat cafe. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of fun. The story, it's my favorite story really in the whole book. That's part of the reason why on one of the covers, the first cover of the book, Loki is on the cover, that version of Loki, because I like that character so much and I like that story so much.
Mm-hmm. So it's not because of Marvel.
No. it's funny. I think it's a happy accident. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting because some people have seen this cover and they didn't necessarily recognize the character as Loki because Katrina's version of Loki is based on the myth, which doesn't necessarily look exactly like the Marvel version. I wonder if people will necessarily know that it's the same character before, you know, they read that it is. I just personally think the story is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And that's the Loki and Skadi story.
Now I have to say, when I read your books, I always end up looking things up because there's things I don't know. There's the name of the cafe is a word I had to look up. Mm-hmm. It's spelled YGGDRASIL. Mm-hmm. And how you pronounce that?
Oh, boy.
I think. I don't know. But anyway, I had to look it up.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it was. And when I looked it up, it says that word is, in Norse cosmology, is an immense and central sacred tree. Around it exists all else, including the nine worlds.
Yep.
So I didn't know that. See, as always with your stories, I'm always looking them up so I can learn a little bit of stuff. When I kept seeing the word appears in the background several times, and I said, okay, I got to look that word up. I got to know what it is. It's in there several times and stuff. And so it's really, really, again, that's fun to do it. I pretty much knew it was Loki pretty quick. And that stuff. And I did get an interesting thing about the is there a reason why there's cats?
As far as I know, Katrina might have a different reason, a particular reason for it. I think it's just fun that there's a cat cafe. Mm-hmm. This version of Loki is very playful, and owning a cat cafe seems like just the kind of thing that he would do. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Well, they have their fun with him. Mm-hmm. Story as well, which is half the fun is to see how this all works out and stuff. And the cats, of course, are real cats, and they are they're silly as cats want to be at times, and they do things that make the story move along a little bit. So it's really, really good. It's a very good story. It's only about 10 pages long, but it's a very moving story. Things happen real quickly, which is one of the things I really like about it. It's very well done. So. That's a good one. Is that like the first story in the book?
Yes. That one is the first story in the book. Just because we put Loki on the cover. So I figured might as well launch into the book with that story. And because I think it is, while there are many very good stories, I think all the stories in the book are winners. Mm-hmm. That one I think is a standout. And so we put that. Yeah, and right at the beginning.
And another one is called Galapote, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
And that story is really interesting, too. Once again, I had to look up what a Galapote is. And I got a huge kick out of it. It's Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a legend from there. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that's all about?
Galapote is just basically a werewolf. I mean, that's like really boiling it down to like the most simple version of it, but it's very similar to a werewolf. Basically there's different kinds of Galapotes. Again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly either, but there's good ones and there's bad ones. And so this particular story, is about, an old man telling his grandson a story about a man who got turned into a wolf. And then, you know, it like there's some reveals along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very fun. It's like, I think it's a very energetic art style. And, mm-hmm. That's actually one of the longer stories in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. It's fun. It's touching.
Mm-hmm. What's funny, the thing that made me smile was that he complains that his grandson only likes to play video games.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, when we see what the grandson is, he's actually not playing a video game. He's reading a comic.
Uh-huh. Yep, yep.
Made me smile. I said, "Did Chris, the father doesn't probably know much of the difference between them." And so he interrupts him reading the comic, which is, you know, in a comic, that's a funny bit to do in that, which I really liked. And then he gets into the description. That's where the Galapotes start to get involved. It has a really interesting ending, which mm-hmm. I will not touch on, but there's a wonderful little bit at the very end that's kind of very sensitive. I thought it's really the relationship between the grandfather and the grandson is really touching and really nice. I really like that.
Absolutely. I think Juan Espinoza, who wrote that story, he has a book called Adventures of a System Admin, which he has funded several times successfully on Kickstarter. And I think he's a really great writer. And one thing that I think is really cool about all his books is that they're available in both Spanish and English. He writes them in Spanish and then has them translated.
Hmm.
I really enjoy his writing, and he was not involved in the first Modern Mythology, and we were able to get him on for the second one. So that was really exciting.
Yeah. And of course the Galapote is not necessarily heroic.
No, not necessarily heroic. No, although I think, the character in his story, in this story, is sympathetic. Sure, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
really, really well done. I like the art too. Who did the art? Do you remember?
Yeah. Let me just so that I don't tell you wrong. I've got the list of. It's Adrian Iglesias.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very good. It's really good. I like it. You're right. It's dynamic. It's, you know, it's interesting, even though it's conversation at the beginning. It still draws us in because of the facial expressions and the way the movements. The grandfather's like wagging his finger at the son, at the grandson, and stuff, and that makes it visually interesting. Even before we get to the mythology part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really well done, and I really liked it. So it was a great story, and it was great art to do with it too. So I thought that was a really good one. It's really terrific. And then the next one you got to me, which is one of the really interesting ones, called Heart of Steel.
Oh yeah,
that's a really interesting one. I don't know if you want to spoil what's going on. There's this has to do with a legend much more than, say, a myth. I don't know if you want to call it a myth.
I think the story is about John Henry. And I would say that falls more broadly under the category of folklore. I think one of the reasons that we decided to go with the title Modern Mythology Folklore Retold for this book mm-hmm. is that we're really like, broadening the lens, like what counts as mythology and, you know, folklore and all these words, I think, tend to be pretty interchangeable. Now, there are sort of specific definitions that I think, and there are certain associations that we make with, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's like fables or fairy tales or folklore or mythology. And I think we have certain associations with certain cultures with those words, mm-hmm. but they ultimately are, they come down to the same thing. I mean, I would even argue that like stories about the founding fathers of the United States could be considered mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And so this story is about John Henry, and it's super fun. It's by Matt Cund and drawn by Noah Ray. And those guys have worked together a lot. They recently did a book called Dino Thrashers, which is like a high concept, wacky book. I don't want to speak too much on it because I'm, I don't want to get the details of it wrong, but I've seen, I've seen that book, which is a lot of fun. And of course, so they work together on this story, which is not really wacky. I mean, it's sort of the concept is kind of out there. Like John Henry is on out in space, like mining in space. But it really draws from the original John Henry story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't certain who it was at the beginning, because it doesn't say exactly who it is till we get to the end. But I saw the hammer, and of course, thinking mythology, I thought, is this Thor? Is this Thor with a hammer and stuff? But I like the fact that you're dealing with something a little different.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of a story, and it's black and white.
Largely. Yeah. Yeah, it is. This is the only black and white story in the book. And I think that it works, for this story. I just think it's a really fun, quick little story, about John Henry in sort of a way we haven't seen him before.
Yeah. I like the fact that it went to the future this time or to outer space. It may not be probably is.
I think it is the future. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really an interesting tale. Like I said, I didn't know who it was, so I was guessing until I got to the very end, and then I found out who it was for sure. But I was just, it's really interesting. This is one of the smaller ones. It's 5 pages, but you get a lot happening in those 5 pages.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's,
really
yeah. The stories in the book range from 4 pages up to 16 pages. Mm-hmm. And, most of them are somewhere in between those.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some of them are quick little snapshots, and some of them have some more meat to them. So I think there's a good variety there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last one you gave to me was, and again, I'm probably going to fracture the Hopoe, Hopoe by Kelly Latham, was it?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't actually know how to pronounce this one either. Hapoe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a Hawaiian myth.
Mm-hmm.
In the story itself, the main character, you know, is drawn by some music and ends up finding her way to where this band of Hawaiian god or goddesses is playing music, and but they don't know how to write lyrics, and it turns out that this girl is a poet.
Mm-hmm.
So she's able to contribute write lyrics for their songs.
There's a name of the band that's in there, and I had to look it up, and there really is something by that name. I don't know if you want to spoil that or not, but we don't have to say it. But let's just say that, as always, when I'm reading these stories, I have to look things up. I say, is that real? What is that? And then I look it up, and if there's something I don't happen to know about. But that's one of the things I like about that modern mythology, is that I learned so much about other cultures and stuff.
Well, yeah. So the fun thing about this book is, And when I sent you the preview pages, the stories, you didn't get this, but before and after each story, just like in the original volume of Modern Mythology, there will be information about the myth that inspired the story and the culture that myth is from, and that, and sort of background information, so that, you know, you can learn about where that myth came from and that sort of thing. So, because exactly, like, you may encounter in this book myths that you had never heard of. In fact, as I was, you know, collecting submissions for this book, a lot of these myths I didn't know about. You know, a lot of them were new to me, and so I had to learn about them, which was really exciting.
Yeah, I like to know those kinds of things. And it's not necessarily telling it in the original setting.
Right.
For example, if you update it a little bit, something like the Loki one, you know, all that, there's some changes to it to kind of make it more modern. So interesting, modern readers. There's one story that I found on the Kickstarter page that was interesting. Story's called Prometheus.
Yes. So Prometheus was written by Alberto Rayo, illustrated by Ruvian, and then it has lettering by Diego Ravello. And that is an interpretation of Prometheus, which of course is a story that I think most people will know. You know, Prometheus stole fire to give it to humans. Only this version of the story is sort of in like a sort of grungy, like future, like sort of Blade Runner style, future where Prometheus has, you know, stolen technology. You know, to steal from the powerful, basically, and to give it to the common people. And so that is, that's kind of, what the story is about. And I think it's really fun. And I think this story is an example of one that is, a little darker and a little more violent. Than the others, for sure.
There's one place in particular where something really bad's going on. No more than that, I won't say. But I literally went, "Oh!" when I was looking at it, because there's something really. Let's just say Prometheus, he has to pay for his sins. And I literally went, "Ouch! Ow! 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 Ow!" when I looked at it, because it's just amazing. The futuristic setting, I think, really helps the story. You know, makes it a little different. And that's the variety of these books are always so impressive. I just think when the first one was really very different, and this one the same. It's great that you've got some of the same kinds of content in both of the books. So the fans of that will be able to come back for that. But I also like the fact that, again, I'm learning a lot and I'm coming across things that I don't necessarily know much about. And I love that. I love to learn. It's one of the great things about comics. I always tell the story about when I was a young kid, I used to read Justice League of America, and Gardner Fox, who wrote it, would teach science.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, he would teach. They went to the Journey into the Micro World, and all this kind of stuff was going on. And then there was another one where they went to different elements were involved, and he was teaching the four elements. And I came away from it. I went, "Oh, those are the four elements." He was teaching me science, and these books are a great way, like a gateway into understanding other cultures, other mythologies, other things that we don't necessarily know about. And I think being aware of the world, I think, is always a wonderful thing. And I just, you know, like I said, I ended up looking up several of the things in the stories because I wasn't as familiar with it. But just wonderful storytelling. I just think it's just great, the terrific stuff.
So if I may, there's a few things that I guess I wanted to bring attention to about this book, that some shout outs I wanted to give. One of the things I did on this book that is different from the last one. In the last one, I was mainly the editor of the book, and I sort of, you know, put it together and wrote the sort of material that taught you about the myths. But I had one little 2-page story in the first book, and in this book, I actually reached out to a couple of author friends of mine who had written novels but not comics, and asked them if they wanted to contribute, and actually co-wrote a story with each of them. So that's Lorelei Jonasson wrote a story with me about the German myth of Lorelei. And then my friend Stephen Lalonde, who has written several mythology novels, teamed up with me to write a story about Phaeton, the son of Helios, who drives the sun chariot across the sky. And on those stories, on Phaeton, we had Nick O'Gorman draw that story. And then the Lorelei story is drawn by C.R. Florence, who did another story in the book as well. And is, of course, just like a massive talent. And so that was really exciting for me. It was to co-write with people who were accomplished writers in their own right, but hadn't written comics before. And so I got to kind of be a guide there and co-write. And then also, I just have to do my due diligence and give a shout out to Dave Lentz. I'm sure you're familiar with Dave Lentz's work. Dave Lentz, I met when I was putting the first Modern Mythology together. I didn't know him before that. And he, one or two of the teams that did stories hired Dave Lentz to letter their stories. And then, and then I sort of roped him into helping me put the whole book together. And since I have just drugged Dave Lentz around and made him letter every project I ever do. And he's awesome. Yeah.
Cool. Now your name's on another, I'm looking at the list and I see your name on another story with Alex Lewis.
Oh yeah. Right. This is fun. So Alex Lewis, is a very good friend of mine and wrote and drew a story in the first Modern Mythology, about Baba Yaga, which was a story I loved. And she did not have time to draw a story for the second volume. But I said, what if you write a story and I'll draw it? And so that's what we did. And so it's a Russian sort of monster story called the Leshy. Which is about sort of like a wild man creature that lives in the woods. And in our version of the story is sort of cast the Leshy as like a protector of the woods and doesn't like when people go into the woods and make a mess and litter. And sort of like plays tricks on people who do that. And that's kind of the basis of the story.
Cool. There's some other names that I recognize. John Crowther.
Yep.
Florida guy. He's the guy that likes to draw or write wrestling books and stuff like that. I've interviewed him on this podcast too. And then it's a common name, but is that Frank Martin from like Polar Paradox? Frank Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good, because I'm looking forward to that story.
Frank Martin has been, and then Dan Scalise was the artist on his story, and he's been prolific lately. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff.
And I think he's doing a second Kickstarter for the conclusion of the Polar Paradox story.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of. So there's all kinds of good things going on. And then there's another one that I recognize. Of course, you're from Florida. You've got a couple, like Travis Gibb.
Another story.
He's pretty well known down here in Florida too. So that's pretty. You've got some really good names and stuff like that. Really excellent stuff. You're not just Florida, but lots of other places too.
It's funny because, of course, if anyone who's listening might not know this about me, I lived in Florida for about 4.5 years, and that's how I met Wayne. We met just running into each other at a convention. Well, I think we both happened to be chatting with Walter Ostley. And then Walter introduced us.
Doesn't everybody?
Right. Well, Walter is like the great connector of everyone. And so yeah, a lot of the people that I'm connected with through comics are Florida people because
cool.
I lived there. But then, you know, there's people from all over the place on this list.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And of course you've got people from different cultures as well.
Oh yeah.
So that's a good thing. So it's a great book. I'm really looking forward to it. And from what I was seeing, how many pages is that?
It's 180 pages total. So this is a big book. It's bigger than the last one. And the last one had 17 stories and this one has 20.
Wow. Yeah. So you've got a lot of good stuff going on. This is really going to be great. Again, it's Modern Mythology Folklore Retold. And when is it going to conclude?
July 24th, I believe.
Okay, so that'll be good. If it changes a little bit over time, we'll be all right with that. But yeah, this is going to be a great book. And I can't wait to see what this stuff's going to be. It's really going to be fun stories to read. I love anthologies, and there's for a long time comics companies avoided them like the plague. But it gives so many different creators the chance to stretch their wings and do something a little different. And yours, your book, I think, was one of the ones that I really enjoyed. The Modern Mythology, the first one, I think, kind of helped open it, because now, you've got like Marvel and DC are both doing anthology type books. And I'm glad to see it. I think you guys, the indie people, kind of led the way and said and proved that this was doable, so the big companies could jump on board and start making them. So I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
They're fun. They're definitely fun. Because you get to see a lot of different styles. And for me, just making it is fun because, I get to make new friends. So all these people who participated are just like really cool people who all, got together and collaborated. I mean, honestly, in large part, I think if the people who do these kinds of things, put together these kinds of books, do it because they love it like so much that I think that, we'd be perfectly happy just going on making stories and putting together collections. And even if no one ever read them, we would just be perfectly happy, trucking along.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that people want to read them is just sort of icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great. How many Kickstarters have you done now?
Oh, goodness. This is my 9th Kickstarter, but to be fair, not all of those are comic books. Two of them were like silly postcards where I like drew silly animals that were like little, $25 Kickstarters just for fun.
Yeah.
But this is my 9th total Kickstarter.
Yeah. Cool. So you're getting good at it by now. It's a good
Well, I'd like to think so.
So it's great. So 20 stories and 180 pages. That's definitely worth supporting. Once again, Modern Mythology Folklore Retold. So be sure to look for it and get to support it. So Caleb, other projects that you're working on, as busy as this keeps you, I'm sure you've got other irons in the fire.
Oh yeah. Well, so, we not long ago finished up Unicorn Vampire Hunter issue 2, and I'm currently working with the artist on issue number 3. Mm. And we have no plans of slowing down there. Mm. And then also I have a book that will be launching next year called The Knight and the Lion, which is a King Arthur retelling with and I'm working with Jonathan Fisher and Dave Lentz on that book, which has been, that's been something we've been developing for a really long time. And, it's funny. I think that book, is, maybe by next year when we launch it, it won't be as relevant anymore. It's, I almost wish we had timed it, a little better because they've got that, the Green Knight, movie coming out this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is looking like it's going to be a really big spectacle. So yeah, that's coming out next year. Cool. Then there's other things that I'm working on that I'm, are like really early in development, but those are the main things. Unicorn Vampire Hunter is still trucking along. There will be more issues. And then, The Knight and the Lion, which is a King Arthur thing, will be coming out next year. So,
yep. Very cool. Very cool. Now, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Well, you can follow me at Caleb Palmquist on both Instagram and Twitter, but you might not see me post very much. I'm pretty bad at those. The one that I'm active on is Facebook. But you're welcome to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Caleb Palmquist. Mm-hmm. The best way really to keep up to date with what's going on is to follow me on Kickstarter or, you know, it's a good question. I should have better ways for people to follow what I'm doing. I'm thinking, like, what is the best way for people to keep up with that, what I'm doing? I think the best way might be to, like, post yourself outside my house and, like, watch me so that you know when I'm about to, you know, do something important. I'm just kidding. I should have an easy way for people to sign up for my email newsletter. I do keep a new email newsletter that I update regularly, and that's probably the best way to keep track of what I'm doing, but I don't actually have an easy way to sign up for it, which is a big oversight on my part. So, you know.
If we go to, like, your social media, is there a way to find it through there, or is that?
I will. You know what? By the time that this airs, there will be.
Okay.
If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, you'll find a link to the to Modern Mythology and to the Kickstarter itself. And there'll be information on how to sign up for my email list. And,
great. Okay. Cause you tell good stories and it's all very fun reading. And on many levels, I learn a lot when I'm reading it too, as well as getting a good story and being entertained that way. I find things that I don't know, and I love to discover new things. And so your writing really helps me about that. I always come away going, like, boy, I know more than when I started to read this book. And that's always a good thing for me.
That's great. Thank you.
That's great. So just keep them up, Caleb, and just do the stuff. When you come up with something, I'm always fascinated to see what it's going to entail. And like Unicorn Vampire Hunter, like I said, that was a really creative direction for unicorns and stuff like that. So a lot of your books are that way. It's always something really new and different that I've never seen before. And as somebody who's read comics for a long time, I always appreciate that. So just keep doing those wonderful things.
Well, thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.